Well, good morning. It's certainly a beautiful Lord's Day that we have. It's good to see everybody that's out. We have a lot of visitors. We're so glad you're here as we attempt to worship and study God in spirit and in truth. For a little while this morning, I have a lesson that I've entitled. I know it sounds a little bit crazy like most of my lesson titles, but this is The Other Sons of Aaron. You ever heard of a guy named Peyton Manning? Quarterback? Peyton's got a brother by the name of Eli Manning. Everybody knows about Peyton and Eli. Did you know there's another Manning brother? Yeah, nobody cares about him. My daughter might be impressed with this one. Did you know there's actually four Jonas brothers? And half of y'all don't even know who the Jonas brothers are. If you don't know, consider yourself lucky. But only three of them are in the band. There's actually a fourth Jonas brother. But sometimes we forget about the ones that, you know, that aren't quite as well known and important, or so we think. So we're going to study a little bit this morning about the other sons of Aaron. Church of Christ, we are pretty much into that cautionary tale of the first two sons of Aaron. Their two names of Nadab and Abihu. And we talk a lot about Nadab and Abihu because of the lesson that we can learn from the mistake that they made. But there's two others. Exodus 28:1. Now take Aaron your brother and his sons with him from among the children of Israel, that he may minister to me as priests. Aaron and Aaron's son, Nadab, Abihu, wait a minute, Eleazar and Ithamar. So we know a lot about Nadab and Abihu, but what do we know about these other two fellows, Eleazar and Ithamar? What do we know about these two guys? Well, we're going to study a little while this morning. There's actually two lessons kind of combined. It's the lesson of Nadab and Abihu, and then the lesson of Eleazar and Ithamar. Before we go further, though, let's take opportunity to go to God in a word of prayer. So if you've got your Bibles out, you may want to turn to Leviticus chapter 10. Leviticus chapter 10, and that's where we'll spend the better part of our lesson this morning. We got to remember, Aaron was a high priest. And so Aaron had been called upon, and that was his responsibility, that was his role. Leviticus 8 and 9, if you read through, it's strange. Some of the stuff that they had to go through, at least we would consider it strange. A lot of blood involved in it, and different animals had to be killed and sprinkled on this and that. Leviticus 8 and 9 detail the consecration of Aaron and his four sons so that they may be able to operate as priests. The ceremony is very specific. They had to do some, it's kind of off-the-wall things, but that's what God commanded for them to be consecrated. And then at the conclusion of the ceremony, the Bible says that the glory of God appeared unto the congregation, and in doing so, I showed God's appreciation and His acceptance of this consecration. In Leviticus chapter 9, verse 23, and Moses and Aaron went into the tabernacle of meeting and came out and blessed the people. And then the glory of the Lord appeared to all the people. And fire came out from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the fat on the altar. And when all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces. So it's pretty impressive to see that fire come down from heaven and consume that burnt offering. Well, something very similar is going to happen to that in Leviticus chapter 10, but it's not quite as pleasant, and the people are not going to be quite as well, they may have been excited, but for a different reason. You see, there was a couple priests here. We're seeing we're having some technical difficulties. I've already turned off twice on me now. Try again. We're about to just turn this off. I don't know why it's not working today. So go to Leviticus chapter 10, and we'll just have to do it old school, I guess, without the help of the slides. So we have two priests here, these two sons of Aaron. Their names are Nadab and Abihu. And unfortunately, they're not going to be priests for very long. I don't know how long they had been offering sacrifices, but it just wasn't going to work out for them very well. But I want you to understand how important Nadab and Abihu were. And they were very important people in the grand scheme of things. In the 24th chapter of Exodus, verse 1, Moses is called upon to go up to Mount Sinai to receive the commandments from God. And he said to Moses, come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel and worship from afar. So we had Moses, and then right below Moses was Aaron and his two older sons, Nadab and Abihu. So as Moses came down, the first people to see him were Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, those three together. Exodus 24:9 says, then Moses went up, also Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel. And they saw the God of Israel. I mean, that's pretty impressive. Nathan Batty, one of our evangelists, on his website, I was reading some things that he had, and he made a real interesting connection to when Jesus went up on the Mount of Transfiguration. That's recorded in Matthew chapter 17, verse 1. That Jesus also took three people with him. Jesus took Peter, James, and John up into the mountain, and then he was transfigured before them. And so Nathan makes a pretty interesting connection between the importance of Peter, James, and John, and Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu. Now, kind of a symbol or an image to come. All I know is Nadab and Abihu were pretty important people. And they had a very important role in the tabernacle worship. Leviticus 10:1 says that Nadab and Abihu, and we've probably all heard this story, the sons of Aaron, each took his censer and put fire on it, and put fire in it and put incense on it and offered profane fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. So my question is, what was the sin of Nadab and Abihu? What did they do wrong? All the Bible tells us that they offered strange or profane fire. What does that mean? What does that mean to have offered profane or strange fire? I don't know that I can give you an exact answer. I can kind of read between the lines a little bit, and I can see how God responded, and I have a pretty good idea of what it means, but I can't tell you 100% what this strange or profane fire was, because the Bible does not go into great detail with it. Now, I can tell you this. In Leviticus chapter 16, after the death of Nadab and Abihu, God gives them very structured rules and requirements to Aaron, to make sure that Aaron knows what to do, and so this will never happen again. Leviticus 16:1. Now the Lord spoke to Moses after the death of the first two sons of Aaron when they offered profane fire before the Lord and died. And the Lord said to Moses, tell Aaron your brother not to come at just any time into the holy place inside the veil before the mercy seat which is on the ark, lest he die. He says, you tell Aaron not to come in to the spots of the tabernacle that he's not supposed to be in. So I kind of read between the lines a little bit. Were Nadab and Abihu somewhere in the tabernacle that they were not supposed to be? Is that why that the fire they offered was strange or profane? I don't know. He continues in Leviticus 16:12. God's given instructions to Moses. He said, tell Aaron this. He shall take a censer full of burning coals of fire from the altar before the Lord. See, there was a certain altar that was there, that's where they were supposed to get the coals from for the incense. That's where it was very, very specific in God's word. You use this altar. Don't use that one. Don't use that one out there. You use this altar. I kind of read between the lines. Were Nadab and Abihu taking fire from the wrong altar to offer up the fire? And that's why God considered it strange fire or profane fire? Probably. And I'll give you one more. Right after all of this happened, in Leviticus chapter 10, verse 9. And as far as I can tell, this is the only time that God ever directly spoke to Aaron alone. And this is what he told Aaron. After Nadab and Abihu, his two sons, were killed, do not drink wine or intoxicated drink, you nor your sons with you, when you go into the tabernacle of meeting, lest you die. Again, I'm reading between the lines here. Nadab and Abihu, they took incense, or they took the fire from the wrong altar. They were in the wrong spot of the tabernacle. And probably the reason they weren't thinking too clearly is because they were drunk. That's what I'm going to say, Nadab and Abihu. That was their profane fire. This was their strange fire. The Bible doesn't get exactly specific and lay it out for us. Whatever the case, Nadab and Abihu were going to pay for their transgressions with their lives. Leviticus 10:2. So fire went out from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. So, chapter 4, the fire came down, God was pleased and burned up that sacrifice. Now God is not pleased. And the fire comes down and it burns up Nadab and Abihu because of the profane fire. Can you imagine that? I mean, forget everything else. I mean, most of us in the room are parents. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine seeing your two sons burned up in the tabernacle? Can you imagine? I can't imagine losing a child. Could you imagine losing two of them at one time? Aaron must have been distraught. Moses, let's not forget, these were Moses' nephews. He was close to them. These were two of the most important people in all the congregation. They were the ones that got to go up on the mountain. This is Nadab and Abihu. This is serious business. That didn't matter. Leviticus 10 and 3. Moses said to Aaron, "This is what the Lord spoke, saying, by those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy. And before all the people, I must be glorified." So Aaron held his peace. I'm sure Aaron wanted to say something, but he couldn't. Because his sons had not treated the worship and had not treated God holy. And they paid the price. So we talk a lot about the lesson of Nadab and Abihu. We talk a lot about this cautionary tale. And the lesson is we have no right to change God's worship. We're not allowed to do that. And if we do that, we run the risk, the same risk that cost Nadab and Abihu their lives. And I suppose here in the Church of Christ, probably more than any other, that story is always in the back of our minds. I know our worship is different than most congregations. I know we sing differently. I know we teach differently. I know we're going to commune differently than pretty much everyone in this town and this country is going to do today. I understand that. And there's always that tale, why don't we just do something different? Why don't we change it? Why don't we make things a little bit more modern? Why don't we make things a little bit faster? Why don't we make things a little bit more convenient? And it won't take very long until Mike Howard would say, "Don't forget what happened to Nadab and Abihu." They changed the worship. They offered profane or strange fire, and God did not accept their worship. And that's why we don't change things, because we don't want to offer worship that God does not accept. And so we study the Bible, and we look at the New Testament, and we have scriptures, and we have authority and justification for the way that we worship. And if someone says, "Well, hey, let's just change it, it's okay," someone's going to say, "Yeah, remember Nadab and Abihu. What happened to them when they half-heartedly changed God's worship? It cost them their lives." And usually the story ends. And that's about all we talk about. We talk about Nadab and Abihu and what happened to Nadab and Abihu and the cautionary tale and how we should never, you know, we can't change things. It's God's law. We can't change God's law. And then we offer the invitation song. Well, I'm going to stretch it out a little bit this morning for you. We're going to talk about the other sons of Aaron. Remember, there's four. Well, now there's two. Nadab and Abihu have been killed. Well, now we still have Eleazar and Ithamar. And this sounds brutal. They were told, "Do not mourn for the death of your brothers." And Aaron's told the same. Don't cry for them. Don't mourn for them. It is business as usual. You are to go on like you always do. No mourning. Don't wear sackcloth. No ashes. None of those things they did to mourn a death. None of that was to happen. They were to continue their temple instruction. They were to continue their temple work. And that included making sin offerings. They had to make her a sin offering that very day. Wow, that's brutal. See your brothers killed instantly. They had to call in some of the cousins to come pull them out of the building. Because Eleazar and Ithamar and Aaron couldn't touch the bodies, they'd be considered unclean. So they had to call in some of the extended family, pull them out. And they're sitting there watching all this. But Eleazar and Ithamar are not allowed to cry. They're not allowed to mourn. They have to go back to work. And so they had to offer the sin offering. Well, on the sin offering, there's a lot of different types of offerings under the law of Moses. Sometimes the offering would be burned completely. Sometimes you would burn part of it and the priest would eat part of it. Sometimes there would be a grain offering. It was very, very specific. Well, sin offerings were very, very specific. And what had to happen was the fat of the animal was to be burned, and then the priest were to eat the remainder of the carcass, the remainder of the animal. So in Leviticus chapter 10, verse 12, Moses now comes in back to the scene. He says to Aaron, to Eleazar, and to Ithamar, his sons who were left. A sad way of saying it, right? The sons that were left. It says, take the grain offering that remains of the offerings made by fire to the Lord, and eat it without leaven beside the altar, for it is most holy. You shall eat it in a holy place, because it is your due and your son's due of the sacrifices made by fire to the Lord, for so I have been commanded. But Moses said, you keep doing what you're supposed to do, offer the offerings, and eat it the way you're supposed to, because it's holy. Leviticus 6 and 26 tells us a little bit more insight. It says, the priest who offers it for sin shall eat it. So whichever priest offered it was to eat it. In a holy place it shall be eaten in the court of the tabernacle of meeting. Very, very specific. They were to eat the remainder of this sacrifice. Well, Moses, I mean, I guess he realizes. I mean, can you imagine the day that has just transpired? I mean, these two young men are dead now. Moses' two nephews. Aaron is distraught but not allowed to grieve. You've got these two others that have now had to step in and continue to priest. So Moses, I guess, decides to do a little bit of micromanaging. Moses wants to make sure everything is being done correctly. So in Leviticus 10 and 16, Moses comes back. And it says he made careful inquiry about the goat of the sin offering. He wanted to see what happened to the goat if the sin offering was done correctly. And Leviticus 10 and 16 says, there it was, burned up. And Moses loses his mind. I wish the Bible would type the next couple verses in all caps. Because Moses is furious. He loses his mind with Eleazar and Ithamar over this goat. Because Moses walks in and he sees this, the goat has been burned down to nothing. That's not what was supposed to have happened. The fat of the goat was to have been burned, and the priests were supposed to have eaten the rest of the animal. And Moses loses his mind. There, we only have five priests. There's Aaron, there's Nadab and Abihu, there's Eleazar and Ithamar. Okay, Nadab and Abihu are already dead. And now Aaron has now messed up. And Eleazar has messed up. And Ithamar has messed up. And Moses loses it because he realizes things are about to get really, really ugly. So Leviticus 10, 17 and 18. I'm telling you, imagine this being in all caps, bold letters with about a size 32 font. He is hot. Why have you not eaten the sin offering in a holy place? Since it is most holy, and God has given it to you to bear the guilt of the congregation, to make atonement for them before the Lord. Let me paraphrase that. Why did you not eat like you were supposed to? Why did you do your own thing? Verse 18, see, its blood was not brought inside the holy place. Indeed, you should have eaten it in a holy place as I commanded. Moses said, I can't believe this. We already lost Nadab and Abihu, and now y'all have messed up too. Y'all did not do what you were supposed to do. You did not follow what I commanded you. I told you to eat it, and you didn't eat it. And I'm sure Moses is probably just stepping back, you know, waiting for the fire. Waiting for the fire to burn up the next three because they did not do what they were supposed to do. Leviticus 10 and 19, Aaron steps up. And Aaron takes responsibility as the father and as the high priest. He says, look, this day they have offered their sin offering and their burnt offerings before the Lord, and such things have befallen me. He said, I just lost my two kids. He says, such things have befallen me. If I had eaten the sin offering today, would it have been accepted in the sight of the Lord? And so what's that? What's that phrase mean? If I had eaten it, would it have been accepted in the sight of the Lord? I've thrown this phrase around the last couple months when we've gone through this nonsense. Aaron made a decision of conscience. Aaron had to make a decision. Because he says, would it have been accepted in the sight of the Lord? What I think that means is that when the priest partook of the meat and when it ate after the sin offering, it had to be done in a certain way. You had to have a certain mindset. Let me give you two verses. Deuteronomy 12:7. And there you shall eat before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice in all to which you have put your hand, you and your households, in which the Lord your God has blessed you. They had to rejoice because the way their household had been treated by God. I don't think Aaron could do that. Aaron couldn't rejoice. Aaron just watched his two sons burned, dead. Aaron couldn't rejoice. Deuteronomy 26:14. I have not eaten any of it when in mourning, nor have I removed any of it for an unclean use. He says, I can't. You're not supposed to eat this in mourning. Now, Aaron was not allowed to have outward signs of mourning, but Aaron was hurt. Aaron was in mourning. Aaron's two sons had just been taken away from him, just like that. No warning, nothing. Gone. Moses said, I can't eat it. I'm in mourning. I can't rejoice while I eat this. I can't rejoice about my household and how God has blessed my household. He said, I can't do it. He made a decision of conscience. And he said, I can't do it. So our question becomes, did God destroy the other sons of Aaron also? He destroyed Nadab and Abihu for their sin. Did he destroy Eleazar and Ithamar? You may not know the answer to that question, but I'll tell you the answer is no. He did not. God relented. God did not punish Eleazar, Ithamar, and Aaron. In fact, we can continue to read mainly about Eleazar because he was the next in line. So we read through the book of Numbers. You'll read a lot about Eleazar. And you'll read all the way to Samuel, and I believe it was in the Chronicles. It talks about Eleazar and Ithamar, their lineage, and all of the descendants that came from Eleazar and Ithamar. So they became very successful priests under the law of Moses. But here's my question. Why did God punish two of the brothers with death and forgive the other two? And I wish I had a really, really good answer for you, but I don't know that I got one. Leviticus 10:20, after Moses hears Aaron's explanation, he says, the Bible tells us when Moses heard that, he was content. And apparently so was God. Because God offered something to these two brothers that we need to be begging for as well today, and that is called grace. God forgave them. God showed him grace. The other sons of Aaron were not killed, and they were allowed to continue their duties as priests. So what's the difference? What's the difference of the sins of Nadab and Abihu and the sin of Eleazar and Ithamar? What's the difference? In all honesty, I don't know that I can say. I know Exodus 33:19, the words of God, he says, I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. God is going to be gracious. God is going to have compassion. God is also very just. And God is also a God of vengeance. You know, it's been a couple years ago now. We studied a passage in Romans 11:22. And I love this verse. Therefore, Paul writes, consider the goodness and severity of God. On those who fell, severity, but toward you, goodness, if you continue in his goodness. God is a God of goodness. God is a God of severity. And we cannot focus too much on one part. You have to consider the whole. If all we think about is how great God is and God is good, we have a tendency to take advantage of him and think we can do whatever we want to and get away with whatever we do. It's not the case. If all we focus upon is the punishment and the severity and the harshness of God, then we miss out on the love of God. We miss out on what it means to be a child of God. We have to be able to continue where we can see both of them at the same time. I love the passage about the two mountains, Mount Gilgal, Mount Ebal. I love it. They've got the goodness and the severity of God. So I wish I could tell you the difference. I don't know if the Bible really truly explains it. I'm going to give you my perspective, though. This is my supposition. In the reading this morning that Drew did you pick up on all these uses of words of sin, or what we would consider sin? There was iniquity, sin, transgression. What's the difference of all of those words? I don't know that I really know. But it means something different to God. There's a difference between sin and iniquity and transgressions. I know Terry has done some work on that. It's a fascinating study. And I don't know that I really understand it, because that's now placing me kind of in a role of a judge. And I don't want to try to step on God's toes and tell God what the difference of sin and iniquity and transgressions and how he ought to handle it. But I figured something out over the years, especially we studied the Sermon on the Mount. There is a difference in types of sin. And God considers things differently. God considers the motive and intent of a person's heart. And I don't know how to describe that. The sins of Nadab and Abihu, I would say, is a sin of what we would call presumption. And that word presumption, you read that in the Old Testament, it has the connotation of shaking your fist at God. That you're thumbing your nose at God. You're standing up blatantly challenging God. Nadab and Abihu had done sacrifices before. They knew what to do. They knew what they were commanded to do. And they flat out chose not to do it. They shook their fist at God and said, "We're going to do it our way. This is how I want to do it. I don't want to use that fire. We're going to use the fire I want to do it." It was a sin of presumption. They knew what to do, but they chose not to do it correctly. What about Eleazar and Ithamar? And to include Aaron in that as well. Yeah, they sinned. They missed the mark. It's a little different, isn't it? It's a little different the way that, where the reason they sinned. Their sin was born of human weakness in a time of just tremendous emotional distress. They made a mistake. And God forgave them. I don't know if that's the reason. But I do know one thing. Motive and intent of a person's heart is important to God. Sins of presumption have a tendency to just get worse and worse and worse and worse. Because once you start shaking your fist at God, you can continue doing whatever you want to do. When you make a mistake, there's a difference between making a mistake and living in sin. There's a difference. Everybody's going to make a mistake. Everyone is going to miss the mark. Everyone's going to fall short. There's a difference between that and shaking your fist at God and saying, "I'm going to do it my way, and God, you got to deal with it." There's a difference. There's a difference of the intent and the motive of the heart. There's a difference between sinning and living in sin. And God forgave Ithamar and Eleazar and Aaron. I want to be careful, though, because we like to teach the lesson here of Nadab and Abihu. You start messing around with God, you're going to have the same results as Nadab and Abihu. Well, it might be just as easily to step back and say, "Listen, we can kind of do whatever we want to, because God's going to treat us like Eleazar and Ithamar. God's cool. God is going to back off, and he'll allow us to kind of do what we want to do." Don't fall into that trap. In fact, the Apostle Paul discussed that very same issue. This idea of taking grace and taking advantage of it, that we can do whatever we want to because, you know, God's going to be gracious towards us. Romans 6:1. Very carefully, he said, "What shall we say then? Shall we continue in grace that sin may abound?" He said, do we get to do whatever we want to? Can we live in sin because God is gracious? No, that is not what it says at all. We need to understand that God is going to be gracious, but we can't take advantage of it. We can't look, "Well, we can just do whatever we want to," because God's going to forgive us in the end. God's grace should never be taken advantage of. We can't allow grace to become a get-out-of-jail-free card, so to speak, where we can do whatever we want to, live however we want to, because we know God's going to forgive us in the end. No, it is our responsibility to follow God's word. So we've got the lesson of Nadab and Abihu, and the lesson of Eleazar and Ithamar. So So real quick, I'm going to read this letter. I think Terry did this several years ago. I found this. It's from Nathan Batty again. It is a letter. It's written tongue-in-cheek from the perspective of Nadab and Abihu. This is why we teach so much about Nadab and Abihu. Brethren, it begins, it is with the most utmost humility that we inform you of a change of worship practice in your normal sacrifices. Be assured that we are bringing about this change only after much prayer and study. We have recently concluded an in-depth study of the law as delivered by Moses, and we have decided that this is right. We have decided to bring about a change in the type of fire used in worship. We are aware that there is a standing tradition of using only one source of fire, but we as holy priests do not feel obligated to blindly follow tradition. Numerous polls of our worshiping clientele indicate the overwhelming opinion that they do not care where we get the fire from, just as long as the service is conducted in a respectful and meaningful way. We were in agreement with this growing majority as we cannot see how a change in fire will affect anything in the least of our sacrifices. The animal is still properly cooked, the incense burned, and we are of the mind that if we were to secretly substitute a different fire, it would be impossible for any of the worshipers to know that a change had taken place. Besides all this, we have become aware of the fact that nowhere in the law does the Lord forbid the use of what some detractors have referred to as strange fire. We feel that the lack of such a restriction was meant to give us freedom. For those who disagree, we would ask you to show us any place in the law that tells us we cannot do something the Lord has not seen fit to condemn. We also wish to point out that the congregation of Israel is the only religious group in the known world that willingly limits itself to one kind of fire. We have become the laughing stock of the land of Canaan and have been ridiculed openly by many groups. This only one fire, self-righteous policy has alienated us from everyone else. We believe this change will open up many fellowship opportunities. Now to set the minds of some of you at ease, we will continue to offer a traditional service using the old-fashioned fire, as well as this progressive service with the new fire. As a matter of fact, we may occasionally use the old fire in our progressive services for special feast days. In this way, we hope that our older citizens are still comfortable, even though they dogmatically insist on a worship style which is declining and we believe to be stunting our growth. Consider the freedom this new practice affords us. We will no longer have the expense of maintaining a constant fire in one location. This will also make it possible to appeal to a younger audience as we discover more entertaining ways to light the fire of our assembly. For those of you who still oppose this use of a new fire, we ask you not to be judgmental of new ideas. We also hope you will not use this change as an excuse to divide our people or stir up trouble within the congregation. We remind you that this has been well thought out of and the majority of elders have signed on with us. It is true we did not include our father Aaron in this deliberation, but we are well aware of his tradition-bound views and still plan to leave him in charge of doing the traditional service. We also did not consult Moses, but his humility is well known, and we are confident that he will uphold the majority decision in this effort to improve our worship. We are very much looking forward to our first new service. We hope you will make a special effort to be present to witness a new age of enlightenment in the Church of Israel. We know God will be watching, and we anticipate that his joy over seeing his people take a great step towards throwing off the burden of binding tradition will be an electrifying experience. For freedom's sake, Nadab and Abihu. Of course, that is written tongue-in-cheek. But that explains, I think, a little bit the mindset, why we talk so much about Nadab and Abihu. We don't have the right to change God's worship. We don't have the right to change anything that the Bible says. And we need to have a command for why we do things. And I think here at this place, we have been very consistent in that. That's the lesson of Nadab and Abihu. But what about the lesson of Eleazar and Ithamar? What's their lesson? Lesson is God is gracious. God is gracious to people who have a pure heart. And so if you make a mistake, fix it. You want to know the big difference between the two? I think if Nadab and Abihu had been allowed to continue, they would have gotten further and further and further away from the truth. That's what sins of presumption. But on the other hand, I bet Aaron Ithamar and Eleazar, I bet they never did the sacrifice wrong. I bet they never improperly ate the sacrifice wrong ever again, because they made a mistake. God forgave them. He fixed it. And that's all there was to it. And that tells us the story of the other sons of Aaron.